This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to another episode of Echoes of Dissent, a weekly podcast that explores the events, the movements, the beliefs and the personalities. In short, the why a song of protest, a song of dissent was written and sung, and who created it. We look at its impact at the time and its relevance to today, if any. My name is Frank Carter, and today we go back to the tail end of the 1960s. The heady hippies, flower power, we're all going to San Francisco, and the British largely boy band invasion of America and, of course, the rest of the world. It was a time when the young and the famous influencers were travelling to the East, sitting down with their chosen gurus to find the meaning of life and then drift into their own version of earthly nirvana and then return to reality to spread peace, love and happiness. But it was also a time of questioning authority, of not blindly accepting what we were told, and the clouds were darkening. By 1970, the American invasion of Vietnam had been dragging on for 7 years. We, along with Congress, had just learned that America had invaded Cambodia in a widening of its Vietnam War. Protests across America and across the world. There were 4 dead students on Kent State University campus. Neil Young's Ohio, written in response, will be the subject of a future program. But for now, there was an increasingly intense frustration and distrust of authority. Onto the stage in 1971 stepped John Lennon with the album Imagine. And this track, expressing the anger and the frustration of the time. The core message is a desperate plea for honesty in the face of deceit, a plea that probably makes it even more relevant today than it was in 1970. I'm sick and tired of Poof, we do not have a happy camper. So was this the voice of a generation, or is it just an ex-Beatle who was missing the limelight, the headlines and the attention? Remember, the Beatles had broken up in 1969 and they'd all gone their separate ways. This is 1971, 2 years later. Perhaps a brief background will give us some idea of where John Lennon was going with this. John Lennon began writing this song with Paul McCartney in 1968 when the Beatles visited Rishikesh, India, and studied transcendental meditation with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. This was kind of like the trend in the mid to late 60s where people were looking for the meaning of life and, you know, all that kind of stuff. McCartney does not recall his contribution, but an early version was performed during the tense Let It Be recording sessions in 1969. So following the 1969 breakup of the Beatles, Lennon underwent his primal therapy. He'd been through transcendental meditation for peace, love and happiness, but now he wanted to see what was going on. Primal therapy. And this encourages raw, unfiltered expression of emotion. So the confrontational 71 release of this Give Me Some Truth undoubtedly reflects this stage in his life. George Harrison, the Beatle who took on a more of this spiritual aspect of the 60s, added a dramatic slide guitar solo in the middle of the track. By the time of the release of this song, Lennon had moved from pop singer to political commentary. He had been moving towards the anti-war and the peace movement. We remember the beds, you know, him and Yoko stayed in a bed in Paris for a week. And of course, at that stage, the media didn't really quite know what was going on, but this is just an ex-Beatle. So he had been moving towards this political commentary position. Now, the key themes in, of course, Give Me Some Truth was political. It's a direct attack on Nixon. And this is the late 60s, early 70s, 1970, 71, before the Watergate and Nixon's resignation as president. It was an attack on chauvinism and bigotry. During this period, the emerging and the awakening of movements and the push, things like women's liberation, LGBTQ rights, racial prejudice, disability rights, and human rights. There was a war on the media, which he saw as manipulating and hypocritical. And also, this is personal and artistic growth following the transcendental meditation and primal therapy. There is no doubt that is a timeless plea for honesty and truth. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. We'll have a look at sections of it, verse by verse. So we'll go to the first verse and see what he's saying in this verse. I'm sick and tired of hearing things. So John Lennon is introducing us to his broad frustration. He rips off the winning smile of the politicians, the media people, the nice, convincing but dishonest words, and the silence that conceals the truth. I've had enough of reading. This was personal. The Nixon administration had been trying for 4 years to silence Lennon by deporting him. They'd be trying to deport him because of an old marijuana conviction. They were frightened by his anti-war activism, and they were not telling the public or even Congress about the war. America had invaded Cambodia. They'd been at war with Vietnam, or in Vietnam against the northern Vietnam and, of course, China for about 7 years, and decided that they had to invade Cambodia because the Vietnamese soldiers were coming down through Cambodia. They hadn't told Congress. Nixon had not told Congress or the public. Suddenly they would find out there were protests. I want the truth. No sure head, yeah, the belly's on the tricky dick. You're gonna put the hose. Yeah, he reiterates Nixon is not his favorite politician, not his favorite. But also this demonstrates the flexibility and the genius of Lennon's language and his use of language. He introduces Mother Hubbard, an old English nursery rhyme. Mother Hubbard, of course, went to the cupboard and the cupboard was bare. And he's saying here, what you are promising me, your truth, what you are saying is bare. Your promises are worthless, because you are empty. That's where he's going. Going on, and then he moves on to, of course, money, just a pocket full of hope. All you're giving him are pockets. The empties, the cupboard is bare. Money for dope, money for a rope. It begins to get a little bit dark, of course. And he's talking, don't try to soft soap me. Soft soap, of course, is the British reference to sincere flattery or manipulating. Don't try to do this. Don't try to have me on. Here, of course, George Harrison's contribution, the spiritual Beatle. And this one, his slide guitar solo. Look, if you're not listening to the music, you're feeling it in your skin and in your bones. He brings in that tension and the protest. This, of course, is where Lennon brings in the social struggles, not referred to specifically, but he is talking about those who wave away the desire, you know, the protests, the movements, the women's lib, the LGBTQ, the disability, the human, general social development, the progressive thinking of the time, and you know, the politicians, and that. Oh yes, I hear what you're saying. Yes, just leave it with us and we'll help you. Of course, all empty. Lennon has said your cupboard is empty, your promise is empty, you've got a pocket full of nothing. And this is where he's saying he's looking for the social justice. Things like the environment, nuclear disarmament, disability rights, they were all coming forward at this time. He is not mincing his words, simply. He's expanding his critique in this particular section to journalists and media commentators. He's suggesting that the truth is buried under layers of distortion, and the owners of the media, probably even more relevant today than it was back in the 70s. We recognise that families such as the Murdochs, the Musks, the Bezos own news outlets. And this is what we read and what we're given all the time. Governments, of course, own have control of certain news outlets, and there is often that struggle between the government of the day and the managers, directors, or whatever of the outlet. Of course, the editorial independence, which editors try to claim, of course, but if they want to keep their job, are we talking about the privately owned ones, of course? If they want to keep their job, of course, they toe the line of the owner. Government media, well, of course, yes, there are some controls, there is some independence, but we still have to, political independence. But do we sometimes see publicly politicians attempting to control or direct, for example, the Radio New Zealand or TVNZ, and it's public. It's made public. So that's good. But let's look at this. Yeah, so Lennon is not happy. His words are brilliant. But at the time, they can be discussed, dismissed. They were discussed, dismissed, as he was a fading pop star, looking for attention. And this is the kind of message that was initially coming through from the news media. But the structure of his music amplifies his frustration, his anger. Imagine, of course, the album. And I have to say, I have one of the originals. Yeah, it's Gathering a Lot of Dust. Haven't been played for an awful long time, of course, because I haven't got a record player. But one day. But going back, his anger from Imagine This is about the fourth or fifth track on the album. It demands, it's a demand for clarity. The contradictions, how does the music, the way it's written, the contradictions between the sweet sound, bright atmosphere chord, it actually quite sounds quite jolly in places. It's, it has that melody of the 60s. But then he brings in the contrast of his anger, his words. Then there's the relentless repetition, but it's not boring. Somehow it's not boring because it's accompanied by this background. The single line chorus, Give Me Some Truth. George Harrison's solo slide guitar, of course, is a stinging mirror of Lemon's vocal. If you're not listening to the words, feel the music in your bones, in your skin, through your skin. And then there's the wall of sound. Background wall of sound that's reminiscent of the Phil Spector era production that makes us feel claustrophobic, is overwhelmed by its density, and it is intentional because it is the noise, the political noise, the media noise that Lennon is fighting against. The background, the overwhelming Phil Spector type of production is the contrast to what Lennon is fighting. In the song, he creates the image, the musical image of what he is fighting against. The song is not just protesting about a problem. It includes the problem in this background. Finally, of course, Liz Lennon's voice. He sounds like he's had enough. We're not taking any more of this rubbish. These lies. This is not a this is not a melodic, polished vocal performance. It's not Paperback Writer, She Loves You, Norwegian Wood. It is angry, frustrated, and highly articulate, and it's unrestrained. It's battling against the wall of dishonesty, untruth, and hypocrisy. At the time, 1971, there was the Vietnam-Cambodian was the major issue. It was re-released and polished up, and in 2020, technology was used to make it rawer and more vibrant. And what was going on in 2020 at the time? Of course, we had the COVID-19 pandemic. We were all in lockdown, and we were all following what we were told, because we had been told, you know, this is the deadly stuff. And fair enough, there was a lot of people dying. We're finding now, of course, there was possibly a few glitches in the information that we were given, but overall, we were following and we believed. There were a few who did not. However, that was it. There was no question. In the United States, there was quite a bit of turmoil. George Floyd protests. George Floyd had been killed in the streets. He'd been arrested for supposedly passing off some $20 counterfeit note. He finished up dead with some policeman's knee on his neck. Massive protests in the States and across the world. There was the 2020 United States presidential election, which Trump denied. He said he didn't lose. Joe Biden came in, of course. And Trump, of course, interestingly enough, we could say that Trump is still saying, give me the truth. Unfortunately, he's not listening to all the courts and all the information and all the stats that are saying, you've already got it. So there's the evidence. So, and Trump is still saying, so he could be seen as turning this around, but there's lots of evidence to say, no, sorry, you've already got it. In the Asia and Middle East, look at this, 1970-71, an Iranian general, Qasem Soleimani, was killed in a US drone strike, raising fears of a major war between the US and Iran. 2020, 6 years later, where are we? And of course, in China, China had greater and greater control of Hong Kong and limiting political freedoms. And this, of course, was sparking international criticism and local protests, which, of course, China wasn't taking much notice of. But what is perhaps more urgent is that little seems to have changed. We still see the same suspicion and lack of honesty. We suspect we're seeing this from our major leaders. We do know that the first casualty of war is the truth. We know that. But to tell lies to justify going into a war, that's not a casualty. That is just deliberate deception. We also know the persuasive power of media. A recent court case, of course, has decided in the States that the major social media, two major social media platforms, are guilty of creating addictive behavior. We know the persuasive, and of course, this is going through the world, the social media stuff. Anybody can put something up and suddenly it's around. What did Winston Churchill say in the 1940s? A lie can get halfway around the world before the truth gets its pants on. Well, come on, it can get round now. A lie can get round the world now in a nanosecond, and it is believed by so many. It is becoming difficult to decide what is correct and what is truth. Truth is being described as fake news. Fake news is being described as truth. How do we tell the difference? There are commentators that are suggesting that an increasing number of us have given up trying to filter because technically it is very difficult. How many sites? I read a headline, I read a bit of paper, something. How do I check to make sure it's true? Yes, the BBC has fact checks. We assume that they've done it right. So an increasing number of us are just giving up trying to filter and treating this all as entertainment. We're beginning to resign or really not really caring because there is just so much we don't know and we cannot rely on. And it's this resignation that becomes so dangerous, leads to demagogic leadership is the next step. So how can we find it? There are a few references in the major news outlets. And you can Google this stuff. How do you check, you know, without going back, you read something, what do you say to yourself? I don't know. Is this realistic? So how do we find the truth quickly and easily? There's a few references. So something like NewsGuard, those AdFontes Media, these, and All Sides. Just Google these things. And NewsGuard gives you a 0 to 100 score on the apolitical criteria. AdFontes gives you a vertical and horizontal and analysis of reliability and left and right thinking. And All Sides, of course, also focuses on the political bias. Media Bias Fact checks, provides searchable data ratings on bias and factual accuracy. These, of course, rely on the contributors being accurate and being unbiased. So, if you've missed those names, those references, this is a podcast. You can go back and have a listen to it again. There we go. So, but before you look at these, is other ways yourself. There are key indicators for personally thinking now. Is this for real? If you're assessing a source yourself, look at these makers. Are the stories, has the person who's written the story got their name on it? And is the source not just the name, but the media source? Does it come from BBC or does it come from ethernet.zod? Is the source of it reliable, generally reliable? Is this an opinion or is it actually reporting fact? If it's an opinion, it's something you can think about, but it's an opinion. It's someone's, what someone thinks or believes, not necessarily fact. Big difference. Does the newsletter, have you ever seen this news outlet say, whoops, sorry, we got it wrong? Do they have a corrections policy? If they do, then there is a suggestion that it's reasonably reliable. Does the article use verified data and multiple sources? Or is it just, there was lots of people parading around and eating hamburgers last week. Is it viable? Or lots of people were sick from eating shellfish last week. Where's the actual verifiable facts and numbers and analysis? Why was it written? Why do you think this thing was written? Is it written to inform you? Or is, like the opinion, is it written to persuade you? Does it seem to have all the facts? Are there some glaring gaps in what it's actually telling you? And does it make sense? Does it actually make sense? And what information is being left out? All these are sort of like quick things that you can do yourself. But of course, when we're reading something quickly, we are reading 15-second time bites. We read the first paragraph, and if we're interested, we're carrying on. to summarize, John Lennon is demanding the truth from politicians, from the media, from the commentators. It's in 1971, before the internet, before World Wide Web. Today, this call seems to be so relevant, perhaps even more relevant than it was in 1971. And John Lennon is asking us, not only asking the politicians, but asking us to stand up and demand the truth. Because the other side of John Lennon's request, demand, is a message to us to continue to demand the truth from our politicians, our commentators, our media. Because unless we do, we are only looking at entertainment and we lose control of our democracy. Thanks very much for being with us. Look forward to being back with you next week when we will travel back to the early 1980s at a seemingly light-hearted sing-along song I originally thought referred to an old Joanna, a pub piano, until I listened to the words.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.